Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Good afternoon. We started a little bit early today. I believe we'll be doing the same thing tomorrow. We started 11 o'clock this week as we're covering live the reaction, the live updates of the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings. Katie, if you could, on the TV, go back. Ben Sasse and Amy Coney Barrett were just laughing about something. I'd like to dip in and see how that's going just for a few minutes here. And it was a moment of what appeared to be levity, and I would like to go to listen in on that. I do want to play this clip because I've had it on my sheet here, and I also have seen people talking about it in our chat on the live chat on our Annie Fry YouTube page. And it's Nancy Pelosi going off the rails on Wolf Blitzer. Now, when you think of somebody being a Republican apologist, obviously Wolf Blitzer is very high on that list, right? The first person you're like, oh, Wolf Blitzer. Yes, absolutely. Have you seen this exchange yet? Ryan, is this the one that you sent us last night?
I sent it to you and you were like, duh, already seen it.
I didn't see that. You set it up first. Yeah, when I read the message, it popped through and I didn't see what you sent. It said, this might be like the president has corona. And then I opened it and I'm like, oh yeah, I know what you're talking about now. That absolutely is. But it was, I watched the whole thing and my mouth was agape at how ridiculous this woman is. This insufferable woman. Listen to Nancy Pelosi here. On Wolf Blitzer.
They really need the money right now. And even members of your own...
I understand that, but
even members of your own caucus... Even members of your own caucus, Madam Speaker, want to accept this deal. $1.8 trillion. Congressman Ro Khanna, let me just quote Ro Khanna, a man you know well. I assume you admire him. He's a Democrat. And he just said this. He said, people in need can't wait until February. $1.8 trillion is significant and more than twice the Obama stimulus. Make a deal, put the ball in McConnell court. So what do you say to Ro Khanna?
What I say to you is, I don't know why you're always an apologist, and many of your colleagues
always
apologists for the Republican position.
Huh?
Ro Khanna, that's nice. That isn't what we're going to do, and nobody's waiting till February. I want this very much now, because people need help now.
Oh my God, I can't stand her. I can't stand it. Wolf Blitzer is not a Republican apologist, and you have to be just clinically delusional to think that. Ryan, when you saw that, like I said, I had seen that on Twitter probably an hour or so before you did. It was not very long beforehand, and you sent it. It definitely struck a chord with you.
I can't believe it. I mean, he's exactly right, and she must never, ever get pushback from anybody other than apparently the president. Because she's going into friendly territory and saying that they're all against her. Because she was saying, well, it's not just you, Wolf Blitzer. It's you and your colleagues are all Republican apologists.
What colleagues? It's unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, Katie, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Katie, did you take that in last night? I mean, come on. Like, and it's one thing to hear it. It's another thing to watch it.
It is. And do you both think that she's just become unhinged? Like, is she just absolutely exhausted right now? And she's a little bit afraid of what's going to happen November 3rd, that she is just totally unhinged?
I think that when you live in a world like she does, that, I mean, at any level of authority, once you get steeped in it, you can start to see things differently than you did when you weren't in that position of authority. And it's funny because our boss, Steve, last night had put out on Twitter something, somebody had tweeted out something to the effect of, like, tweet out your starting radio job income to encourage people to not get into media for the money. And, you know, I thought about mine, when I first got into radio as my first paying gig, I did the math. I think my salary would have been $15,600. So, you know, not really making bank there. That was after I had worked a summer internship that started in May and worked through the end of August. So that was just the internship part. And then I was offered a really generous opportunity to stay on as an unpaid intern just to continue my presence there. So I took it because this was 2006. I guess, the summer of 2006. So I stayed on and I worked until October when I got my first primetime job. But here's the beginning of my radio career. $15,600 salary. Basically, I think I made like $7.25 or $7.50 an hour. No benefits. 55-minute drive from Hamel, Illinois to Webster Groves each way, every day. And that was in a 1996 blue Ford Taurus that would actually shut off while I was driving. And I would just coast and put it in neutral and start the car back up again. I am embarrassed to say that maybe it took me a week or two to realize that I could put it in neutral and restart it, because I would coast to the side of the road and stop, put it in park, start it, and then continue on. 55-minute drive each way, 4 a.m. report time. And this was in an AM radio station that didn't power up till like 8 a.m. in the summer or in the winter, because AM stations have to stay at a lower power until the sun comes up. So I was legit working for hours before anybody could even hear if the radio station was on. But yet, there I was. Minimum wage in the state of Illinois was higher than the money I was making in Webster Groves, Missouri. I could have worked flipping burgers and made more money and driven a whole lot less, and I was board hopping for Air America. I mean, I can't put together a worst case scenario than that. If you don't know what Air America is, it's the liberal version of talk radio, and it no longer exists anymore, and I'll let you draw your own conclusions on that, because they lost me, I'm sure. Sitting in a closet of a studio, making sure the station was on, so legitimately nobody could hear it. That's where you start. And if not everybody who starts that way ends up having their own radio show. And not everybody who starts out with something even bigger, you know, ends up not understanding what it means to have put in your time. How long has Nancy Pelosi been in the position that she's in? Decades and decades. I just saw somebody post on our live chat here about how corrupt California is. And they said that I think they said their dad or something had a Fire Nancy sticker on his car in the 80s. And it's still there. She's still there. I mean, why would she fear anything? Why would she be afraid of anything when she can do whatever she wants and get reelected? That's why she is the best Speaker of House that the Democrats could even have, because you don't want to put somebody up there who's got to be accountable to people. Why would you do that? You need a bully that can go be the Speaker of the House, that can herd the Democrats exactly where they want to, and she can call them out. If she wants to, Nancy can call anybody out, because it's not going to affect her. She's untouchable. She lives in an alternate reality. And her alternate reality has now morphed into some psychosis that makes Wolf Blitzer a Republican apologist. You've got to be kidding me.
I don't know that anybody's ever gotten under her skin, like you said, in her extremely long career, like Trump has. And I think the evidence for that is this interview and many others like it, where she's starting to take on some of his characteristics because she knows they work. But you can't take on Trump's characteristics like attacking the media when you go into friendly territory like CNN and they ask you a very, very simple question that's just a normal political question. You can't turn that and say, well, you're just a Republican apologist. It doesn't work. Donald Trump is unique in the way that he does that. Other politicians can't do it.
Hold on a second. I have a text message right here real quick from Donald Trump Jr. I have to answer this.
Do you? Personally to you?
Yeah, it says it's Donald Trump Jr. So you know it's true.
Mm-hmm.
The situation is dire, Ann. If every grassroots supporter gives $20 now, we'll catch up to the Dems. How'd they get my phone number?
Yeah, what?
Are you getting these texts?
I'm not.
Ryan,
nope,
are you?
I
want to know from folks if you're getting these texts, because I get a text message from somebody. Like, I think I got one from Joni Ernst. At 9:26. It's Joni. I doubt it is. I think she was at the committee hearing. It's Joni. Chuck Schumer is up in Iowa. I need your help.
It's Joni.
Right now.
Hey, Ann, what's up?
And it's to me, meet Joni. Our goal by tomorrow, 600% match is active. Donate. Here's another one. We activated. Nope, somebody's calling me now. I wonder if it's them. Stop talking about our text. We activated 4x matching to defend Trump's agenda and state allies. Like, I don't know what I did. And the thing that frustrates me is it might be something that I signed up for the show's purpose. And they got my phone number. It's unbelievable.
Hey, it's Joni.
Just sitting in the Senate, LOL.
If it is Joni, I'll give you $100. But I'm going to need proof. You're going to need to hold up a Senate notepad in front of yourself when you're answering, and it's going to say, I love Annie Fry. Annie Fry YouTube channel, subscribe. I'll give you more than $100 if you do that. Katie, let's listen in to Ben Sasse here and see. Listen to what just happened.
I'd like to pivot from constitutional structure to baseball for a minute, if you will bear with me. Any of your kids play baseball or softball?
Two of our boys had a very brief career in baseball.
Gotcha. Well, it's obviously not as great a sport as football, but we can still call it the American pastime. And I'd like to talk about the Houston Astros, who are miserable cheaters. Sorry, Cornyn and Cruz, but both of the Texas senators sit on this committee. But I think all baseball fans know that the Houston Astros cheat. They steal signs. They bang on cans. They've done a whole bunch of miserable things historically, and they deserve to be punished probably more than they have been. But tonight is game 4.
Thank goodness the First Amendment protects that right for him to express that erroneous opinion.
If you want to defend cheating, that is certainly the prerogative of the senior senator. And the junior senator from Texas now rushes into the room to do some homerism.
It was going so well.
I noticed that Ted is wearing a Lone Star State flag, but not an Astros mask. Tonight is game 4 in the American League Championship Series, and if Houston loses to Tampa, they will be done. And that leads people to feel kind of desperate at times, right? There are times when you have a game that's your elimination game. You can imagine people wanting to sort of reconsider anything they can reconsider. The ends might justify the means. And you could imagine that the Houston Astros, who've cheated in lots of ways in the past with sign stealing, might try to go to the umpire and try to persuade somebody to expand the strike zone just for Houston in the game tonight. That would obviously be inappropriate, right?
Right.
We can't have two sets of rules. Well, I think that an umpire is obviously supposed to apply rules fairly to both teams. I think we can all agree on that as rules of fair play. And I think some of what we've seen in the questions over the last 3 days are trying to get an umpire to commit to a different set of rules for different teams. And so for what it's worth, just to reiterate what I think so many of us have been trying to argue for in these hearings is the alleged equivalency between Republican and Democratic questioning here implies that Republicans have been trying to get you to pre-commit to certain policy outcomes, and I just don't think that that's actually what's been happening in this hearing. I think that the originalism that you've defended and that a lot of us have been advocating for in advance of and during this hearing is not a request for Republican policy positions to be advocated through the courts. It is rather a plea, not just to you and to future nominees, but to our Democratic colleagues as well, to embrace a system where we again distinguish for the American people between the two political branches and the apolitical branch. The fact that you are before us to be confirmed to a lifetime appointment where you will put on a black robe is a liturgical act where you're cloaking your policy preferences in humility. It is obviously the case that we're all shaped by life experiences. It is obviously the case that people have lived in communities in the past, and most people who end up as extraordinary jurists have been connected to or around the political process at different points in their career. But that is not to undermine the ideals we have in the American system, that judges should not see themselves as super legislators, they should not see themselves as policy advocates, and they do have to take up this new oath to a greater humility. And it means that you lay down certain freedoms that are inalienably and innately yours prior to becoming a judge so that you don't have the appearance of bias and impropriety in the future. And so I want to reassert the idea that we should be trying to excise from our language this idea of conservative and liberal blocks on the court, Republican and Democrat justices. What we want, and I want this to not just be a Republican aspiration, but I want it to be a Democratic aspiration as well again. What we want are people on the court who understand the, with humility and modesty, the judicial role, because it is a limited role. It is not a role to right all wrongs in society. It is not a role to be a policy advocate. And I think you've comported yourself extraordinarily well over the last 3 days, as you've been repeatedly asked to be an umpire who prejudges certain cases, and it isn't your job to do that until the reactive moment when you're actually on the court. So thank you for the civics lesson that you've offered Americans over the last 3 days. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you.
And please tell us how you really feel about the Houston Astros coming out of Nebraska. Dang. With the right hook. My goodness. I don't disagree. They are filthy.
He's a Tampa fan. That's all.
Man, my kids know all of the baseball players to boo when they come to St. Louis. Like when Ryan Braun's up to bat, and my kids are the loudest ones going, boo! And a lot of times they'll be like, Braun? My son will look at me like, he's a cheater, right? And I'm like, yeah, he's a cheater. You can boo him. So then they boo. They just know. I don't know. There's some people that it's what St. Louis does. We applaud. I was at the game when Ken Griffey Jr. hit his, 500th home run or something like that. It was Father's Day. Ken Griffey Sr. was there and Old Bush when it happened. And it was just I remember that moment right now like it happened yesterday. The whole stadium erupted and gave him a standing ovation. We applaud those moments. But if you cheat the game, we are coming after you. Until you retire. Just the way it goes. Man, Ben Sasse, who knew? Senator Coons talking now, and Josh Hawley is coming up here as well. We will make sure that we bring that to you, but we're going to take a quick break and be back with more coverage in just a minute.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I still think we're really on to something, having a DJ actually present at these hearings. I think it could change the world.
If we see it tomorrow, we'll know they listen. And that's why Joni Ernst was texting you, and so was Don Jr.
Why do they all want money? I know why they want money. So we played just before we went to a break, Beth Sass. Shockingly, his questioning, the last part of his line of questioning to Amy Coney Barrett was about how big of the cheaters the Houston Astros are. And he went in hard. Like, he made his point and he circled back four or five times. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to throw this jab at the Astros. It's like, I have a feeling that Senator Sass thinks about how much he doesn't like the Astros at least once a day. Like, there's a point in his day where he's like,
yeah,
oh, I really hate the Astros. I wonder, yeah, I wonder what team he's a fan of, because Nebraska,
maybe the Cardinals.
We got to get to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. I need to know, because clearly he pays attention to Major League Baseball. Well, he called out both, is it Tillis? And
I think
Ted Cruz, I have it right here. He called out Cornyn. Yeah. He called out Senator Cornyn and Ted Cruz, the senators from Texas. And Ted Cruz had something to say about this. He had to get in. Probably a point of personal privilege here. Katie, go ahead.
I was tempted to make a parliamentary inquiry if the unjustified broadside from the senator from Nebraska violates Rule 19 of this body. But I decided not to when I came to the realization that Nebraska lacks a professional baseball team and at times doesn't always have a winning football team either. And so I view it more as a plea for help than a substantive point. And I will say the remainder of the senator from Nebraska's questions and exchange with Judge Barrett I thought was excellent and a wonderful civic education for all Americans. The scurrilous lies about the Astros, I think, should be stricken from the record and forgotten by all.
Thank you.
So I'm tweeting Ben Sass right now because I have to know. Because as Brad points out, Nebraska is Cardinals country. KMOX, the power of the KMOX signal stretches very far. And there are Cardinals fans in Nebraska. And we need to know. I just found out the other day that he was raised Lutheran, and I was like, oh, I think he's Presbyterian now. And I was like, oh, no, I'm kidding.
Nebraska is closer to Kansas City, though. So,
yeah, could be Chicago. It could be any, you know, maybe he, I don't know where he was raised. If he was raised in Boston, which doesn't sound like he was, you know, there's probably some childhood. But I'm going to call him out on Twitter. So I'm going to tweet this here in a second and see what he has to say. I want to talk a little bit about COVID. We haven't talked about COVID in quite a long time, right? Is this still a thing? Of course, it's still a thing. But we have our reminders. It seems as though the reminder of COVID only comes up when it's associated with politics. Have you noticed that? Mm-hmm. Like how drastically political it is? Listen to Tucker last night.
Masks. Well, as it happened, we have the latest for you tonight. And the science comes, interestingly, from the CDC, whose director just told you that masks were magic, more effective than vaccines. But the numbers from the CDC suggest otherwise. A new study conducted by 11 medical institutions analyzed a group of people who tested positive for COVID during the month of July. Here's the interesting part. Among those who were infected, more than 70% reported that they had, quote, always worn a mask for the preceding 14 days. Another 14.4% said they had, quote, often worn a mask. In other words, almost everyone, 85% who got the coronavirus in July was wearing a mask, and they were infected anyway.
How much of this conversation around coronavirus actually is going to be drastically changed after the election? Because listen, folks, we have been hearing things over and over and over again. It has been a way to manipulate. I don't think that the only purpose behind advice that is given to us by the experts that we see on a daily basis initially and quite often since this all started. You know, I think that there is sense behind a modification in how we move about our lives. I am not upset about wearing a mask when I go into a store. When I see people in a store and not wearing a mask, I think to myself, oh, okay, all right. And it makes me feel like, good for you. Like, I'm glad that you have taken this, made a personal decision. Or maybe they just forgot it. Maybe it's not a political statement. But there certainly is quite a bit that is being very politicized when we listen to any type of direction that comes from our government officials regarding COVID. Here's another question. You remember at the beginning, you remember how scary this was at the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
You remember the number of deaths that they talked about as possibly happening? We're at over the 200,000 mark, right? This is Dr. Birx. And this is Dr. Birx in I believe.
So in the flu models, the worst case scenario is between 1.6 million and 2.2 million deaths. That's the projection if you do nothing. So we've never really done all of these things that we're doing. We've put them into a model. We've looked at the Italy data with their self-isolation. And that's where we come up with, if we do things together well, almost perfectly, we could get in the range of 100,000 to 200,000 fatalities. We don't even want to see
that. I know, but you know, you kind of take my breath away with that, because what I hear you saying is that's sort of the best case scenario. If everything works and people do the things you're asking them to do, maybe you can hold the deaths to 1 to 200,000 in this country.
Well, the best case scenario would be 100% of Americans doing precisely what is required.
So you're telling me that in the beginning of April, I believe it was, that the best case scenario, if everybody worked together perfectly, it would be between 100 and 200,000. And here we are in October, and we are over 200,000, which means that this didn't go as perfectly if every star aligned and we did everything right and everybody participated exactly how we're asking them to. We'd be between 100 and 200,000. We're just over 200,000. Did you hear the statistic that they said at the beginning? 1.6 million deaths to 2.2 million deaths. Dr. Birx, who is one of those experts that we are continuing to listen to and trust, and she's traveling the country and trying to make sure that, you know, this we're still on message, I guess. And you listen to Dr. Fauci, when he came out and he said that he thought we couldn't have done it any better. Listen to this here.
There were 20% more deaths, not counted as COVID deaths, other deaths, 20% more than expected in the U.S. from March through August. Do you think that this is a sign that we are actually undercounting coronavirus deaths?
No, you can't say for sure, Jake, but it certainly suggests that that is the case, unless you can find another reason, which I can't think of there being these excess deaths in the context of coronavirus. You'd have to make an assumption that it's reasonably possible, if not likely, that those are deaths that are related to corona and they're just not being counted.
Listen to these experts, folks. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to what they predicted. Listen to how bad it sounded like it could be, and put yourself back in that moment. You remember what it was like in March, specifically as an Illinois resident, when our governor was one of the first to shut everything down. And you're like, this is really freaking serious. And I was, you know, we went out and I actually bought, my husband and I bought, he went and got it. He went late at night. It was like 10:30 at night, and he went to Walmart, and we spent like $350 on groceries or something, which is way more than we normally spend at any given time. And we stocked up. We got Powerade, like little things of Powerade, because of the possibility of dehydration. Like, we had all this stuff, and my husband bought this stuff and put it in the pantry, because, you know, the idea was, if it gets as bad as they say it's going to get, you're not going to be able to go out and get stuff. And we were doing the best we could to prepare for something that we had no idea about. We were afraid. Everybody was afraid. We didn't know. We didn't know what we were dealing with. 1.6 million to 2.2 million deaths? When you hear something like that, you think there's no way that we could lose over 2 million people and it's not me or somebody who I love. That becomes extremely personal. You look at your parents, you look at your grandparents, you look at your children, you look at yourself, you look at your spouse, and you go, we cannot screw around with this. We have to take this really seriously. Now it's the middle of October. The president of the United States and I think 30 plus staff members in the White House have gotten this disease. The president is back out on the stump as vibrant as he ever has been. And have you heard anybody talking about Regeneron? Have you heard that even being discussed? If you were to take the president of the United States, and if he were to have gotten COVID at the end of March or in the beginning of April, and he would have had the recovery and the turnaround as fast as he did now, if you would have seen that in April, how afraid would we be right now? Which is hindsight, right? Of course, we didn't have these therapeutics. We didn't have the knowledge that we have now, that we were afraid of what would happen then. But if in April, we would have been able to have the foresight, the crystal ball, and if somebody would have said, you know what, Donald Trump is going to get COVID in October, right before the election happens. He's going to get COVID. We're going to find out, was it a Wednesday or a Thursday that we found out he tested positive?
Thursday night, late.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I don't know. When did your wife tell you, Ryan?
She told me at about 9:30 the next day, morning.
The day before.
Yeah, can you believe this?
Thursday, yeah. Holy crap! Ryan, you're going to need to know this for the show. So Thursday evening is when we found out. Thursday evening, the president gets COVID. And within 2 weeks, he is on the stage doing his thing as if it never hit him. If we would have seen that in April, if we would have had that knowledge in April, we would not be scared now. We probably would listen to our experts. You know, Fauci, think what you want about him. The guy has a wealth of knowledge on this subject, and politics make it very difficult for us to pay attention to anybody and read between the lines. Dr. Birx, love her scarves. She's fantastic. If we would have been able to listen to them and know that the end result here, and I don't know what inning we're in, sixth inning of this thing, was going to be that the president of the United States, who, if you've paid any attention to the mainstream media, they will remind you he's old and fat and eats fast food and doesn't like to exercise. He's as despicable as they come. I mean, that's what you get from this media, except for Republican apologist Wolf Blitzer. I have to check and see what he has commented about this, Nancy. When you listen to how they talk about Trump, Trump was supposed to die from this thing, you know? When he got this, when we found out that he got this, the worst case scenario, people were talking about Nancy Pelosi is going to be the president because Pence is obviously going to get it. And he's not a spring chicken either. It was worst case scenario. And the dude is back. And there is a cocktail of therapeutics that has helped him get back there. Is it going to work for everybody? Don't have any idea. Is it anecdotal? Yes, it's anecdotal. But if he weren't a Republican and if he weren't Donald Trump, Regeneron would be the headline on every news outlet right now. And it's not. And nobody cares because we're still on this side of the election. And everything that you watch on the coverage of this questioning, it's politics. It's all politics. It's hard to stay grounded in what is real, but it's important to stay grounded in what is real. We're going to take a quick break. Josh Hawley has started speaking here. We can we'll take that from the beginning when we come back. They have 20 minutes today instead of 30 minutes, and I know that not everybody is taking their full time, so it will be a little bit more brief. When we come back, we'll have Josh Hawley as he questions Amy Coney Barrett, and we move through this day, and just a lot to talk about, right? A lot to talk about. We're hardly even talking about Hunter Biden and Ukraine. Nobody is. Why should we? Oh, we will. We will. We'll be back in a minute.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thanks for joining us, choosing to spend some time with us today. Josh Hawley is questioning Amy Coney Barrett on Capitol Hill right now. And we are going to listen in. Katie, let's cue it up.
to you again. Are you aware of any active litigation challenging the constitutionality of Griswold versus Connecticut?
I am not.
Are you aware of any litigation in recent decades challenging the constitutionality of Griswold versus Connecticut?
I am not.
Are you aware of any legal movement out there to challenge the constitutionality of Griswold versus Connecticut?
I am not, although, Senator Hawley, as I said to Senator Coons, I'm certainly not aware of anybody trying to make the argument that a legislature should prohibit the use of birth control. But as you know, Griswold does lie at the base of the doctrine that very much is challenged in federal court.
Here's my point. I was 7 years old when Judge Robert Bork came before this body. I don't remember any of that. I wasn't watching it as a seven-year-old. But what we saw, I think the legacy of the Bork hearings continue to reverberate. His name has become a verb, the Borking of nominees. I think what we've seen today is an attempted Borking of Judge Amy Barrett. The problem is they don't have anything in your record that they could use to so badly misconstrue, to suggest that you're somehow going to fundamentally change America, that now they have to attribute to you the worst readings and most draconian misinterpretations of Justice Scalia. So we take Scalia's record, we distort that, and then we attribute it to you. So let me just come back to your relationship with Justice Scalia. I was under the impression that you were a different person than Justice Scalia and that you had, in your own words, your own mind. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say.
Is it fair to say that you are an independent woman and an independent jurist and an independent professional and also, by the way, a pretty darn good lawyer, and you'll make up your own mind on the decisions, cases, controversies that come before you to the Supreme Court of the United States? Is that fair to say?
Yes.
I think maybe then we can put to rest this attempt to constantly leverage the worst interpretations of Justice Scalia's philosophy, misrepresentations, and attribute them all to you as if you are the same person. Frankly, I think it is demeaning and insulting. And I'm glad that you pointed that out in response about your independence to the last question. Let me ask you about another set of questions, just briefly, you had this morning. Senator Leahy asked you about the Foreign Emoluments Clause, which is in Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 8. He asked you whether it was best characterized as an anti-corruption clause. You might remember that in terms of foreign influence and foreign interference. And then he referenced the president and various allegations about foreign influence. Since he asked you about it, and since he asked about foreign influence in government, I think it's only fair that I ask whether, hypothetically speaking, just hypothetically, if there were, let's say, a vice president of the United States who hypothetically had an adult son, who hypothetically worked for a foreign oligarch, who then sold access to his father, the vice president, and his father then intervened in a case to make sure that that oligarch wasn't prosecuted. Hypothetically, would that constitute the kind of foreign corruption that the Constitution's concerned about?
I can't answer hypotheticals.
Well, I thought you might say that. And I'm glad you don't and won't, because who knows, that case may come before you. But I think it's a fair set of questions to ask. Let me ask you about something different. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, passed by Congress in 1996. Yesterday, Justice Thomas issued a dissent from a denial of certiorari in a case called the Malware Bytes case. Now, I bet you haven't had a chance to see his...
I was just about to say, please don't ask me about it, Senator Hawley, because I didn't have a chance to read anything.
Well, let me read to you just a few parts of it. It's quite significant, I think. Here's from the opening paragraph. When Congress enacted the statute, meaning Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, most of today's major internet platforms did not exist. And in the 24 years since, we have never interpreted this provision, we meaning the Supreme Court. But many courts have construed the law broadly to confer sweeping immunity on some of the largest companies in the world. He's talking about the big tech companies. And he quite methodically, over 10 pages, goes on to set out the ways in which courts, at the behest of these tech companies, have dramatically rewritten Section 230, changing its liability standards. He talks about changing the distinction between publisher and distributor liability, changing the immunity shield, changing the narrow liability shield, extending 230 to protect companies from a broad array of traditional product defect claims. He says it's quite a thorough statement. Here's my question to you. You haven't read this. I don't think you've had a Section 230 case.
I haven't.
So in general, not about his dissent from denial, but in general, what are the dangers of the Supreme Court or any court rewriting a statute, departing from the text that Congress or a legislature, a lawmaking body, departing from the text they have written, that has been adopted, presented and adopted. What are the dangers in that if a court departs from that and substitutes its own judgment, whether it's done in one opinion over a series of years?
So as you've posed the question, without respect to Section 230, just in general, the danger of a court doing that is to subvert the will of the people. You represent the people, as you know, has been pointed out over the course of the hearing. Judges are not elected and they have life tenure and can't be voted out of office. So if judges misconstrue statutes or bend them to the judge's idea of what would be good public policy, then it deprives the people of the chance to express the policies that they want through the democratic process.
And the effect can be cumulative, can it? I mean, you can start with a change to the statute, a rewrite of one provision of the statute that then becomes precedent, and then when the court revisits this case later, revisits the issue later, then they expand that and do a little more rewriting, and pretty soon, 5 or 10 or 15 years later, you're with something that has been so heavily blue-penciled, so to speak, that it doesn't bear much resemblance at all to the original statute. I mean, that's a danger of courts continuously substituting their own judgment. Is that fair to say?
That can happen.
So, let me just say my opinion, not yours. I think it's pretty clear that has happened with Section 230. I think Justice Thomas does an outstanding job here of laying out why that's the case. Let me ask you in a related vein. Justice Holmes, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., said in the famous Lochner case, in his famous dissent in that case over a century ago, he said the 14th Amendment does not enact Mr. Herbert Spencer's social statics. Do you agree with that statement? What do you think he was getting at with that?
So Justice Holmes' famous dissent in Lochner, which was later the position adopted by the court, is that, you know, courts shouldn't pour their ideas of good economic policy into the 14th Amendment to stand in the way of policies that the legislatures enact, for example, on questions of maximum hours for bakery workers or minimum wages and those kinds of things.
You mentioned economic policy. Talk just a little bit about how a court could substitute its own views on economic policy for those of a law enacting body, of a legislature or of Congress.
Sure. Well, in that era, you know, in the Lochner era, and then we saw it also in the cases that preceded the switch in time, the court was standing in the way, I guess in Lochner itself, in the way of reforms for workers that legislatures were enacting. And so if, say, one had a preference for free trade, or if one had a preference for having no minimum wage or having a minimum wage, to hold such a statute that did the opposite of your policy preference unconstitutional because it didn't comport with your idea of the best economic policy would be to thwart the will of the people without warrant in the Constitution.
Are there dangers in courts acting as, let me preface this by saying, most judges are not economists. I suppose some may be, but most judges are not economics experts. Are there dangers in general with courts acting as economic policymakers, deciding economic policy, making economic judgments? I mean, is that something that courts should be wary of as outside their area of expertise?
Well, I am certainly not an economist. I think courts are expert in interpreting law. You know, we've been trained in law schools, and that's what we're good at, and that's what we should stick with.
Senator Josh Hawley questioning Amy Coney Barrett on Capitol Hill right now at the Supreme Court nominee confirmation hearings. We're going to pause this, and we're going to resume more of Josh Hawley's questioning so you don't miss a beat of it when we return. It's been quite a day, and in the meantime, there's just this like little undercurrent of goings-on happening right now. We heard this morning from the New York Post about the laptop from Hunter Biden that the FBI had acquired, and the New York Post wrote an article about this. The latest from the New York Post, just within the last 20 minutes, that there's been an Obama conference call that was leaked to Burisma, and there's some Biden emails included in that. We're gonna look into that breaking news over the break and see what we can see, and we're going to have the latest for you when we get it. More with Josh Hawley asking more questions of Amy Coney Barrett when we return, and the latest on the Hunter Biden, Joe Biden scandal
coming out right now in regards to Burisma and Ukraine. Stick around, a lot more Annie Fry Show headed your way.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.